Hello out there, you fans of films, books, and casts. This is the episode of that podcast that combines all of those things. It's the Film Bookcast. I am your ever-energetic super host, Mike Smith, and joining me as always is...
Mike DiCrescio.
That's right. Basically, if you've never listened to an episode of Film Bookcast before, essentially what we do, we start off with our film news segment. We'll be talking about a variety of stories today, including the recent Oscars. After that, we'll be moving on into our feature-length review of The Lazarus Effect, directed by David Gelb, starring Mark Duplass, Olivia Wilde, Donald Glover, and Evan Peters. And then after that, we will move on to our recommendations for the week. So, Mike, are you ready to get started for the latest and greatest and super...
excellent.
Super excellent episode of the Film Bookcast?
Yes. Even though it's super early in the morning for us, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, we're recording this like 10:30 in the morning.
Which is really pathetic that that's super early for us.
It's ridiculous how sad that is.
Yay, college. Woo.
All right. So let's move on into our film news segment. A lot of news this week about directors jumping onto projects in franchises, specifically franchises based off of Ridley Scott films.
Yeah. He needs some money, I guess. He's just selling all of his stuff.
So about a week ago, it came to be that Neil Blomkamp, director of films like District 9, Elysium, and the upcoming Chappie, will be directing a sequel to Alien. Now, Alien's already obviously a franchise.
Yep.
It has Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, and Alien Resurrection, plus the Alien vs. Predator movies, and Ridley Scott's own Prometheus from a few years ago.
Oh, I forgot about Alien vs. Predator.
I mean, those don't really count.
Those don't count, but that's, like, technically part of it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's got Alien in the name.
It has aliens in it.
Yeah.
You know?
True.
But in any case, Neil Blomkamp's directing the sequel to that. That's going to be in addition to Ridley Scott's Prometheus 2, which is still happening and is still on track for, I think, March 2016. So I believe that's happening first, and then Neil Blomkamp's Alien sequel, which will have Sigourney Weaver reprising her role as Ripley. And in addition to that, Ridley Scott fans, Denis Villeneuve, director of films like Incendies, Prisoners, and Enemy, is going to be directing a sequel to Blade Runner, with Harrison Ford returning in the Rick Deckard role.
I can't believe Harrison Ford's coming back.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's the weirdest part of this,
I think,
to me.
At a certain point, old Harrison Ford is going to make a sequel to all of his movies. All of young Harrison Ford's movies.
I think you're...
So far he's done Indiana Jones, he'll be doing Star Wars, and now he's doing Blade Runner. You know, after that he'll do American Graffiti. His small role in Apocalypse Now will have an expanded universe. Old Harrison Ford.
Just him sitting in a room filing paperwork or something.
We'll get the long-awaited sequel to Witness.
And then... Air Force Two.
Air Force Two. Bring it on home.
I can't wait.
What would Air Force Two even be about?
Does it really matter?
You only serve two terms as a president. So he would not be president anymore.
No, but Air Force Two is the vice president's plan.
That's true.
I don't know if there's laws about happening.
Can the
president
become vice president?
Be vice president? I don't know.
I think if any president could,
it would be Harrison Ford. Amen. As long as he can tell somebody to get off my plane, I'm happy.
Like, he would have to say the line again.
It's the rules.
Yes. In that gravelly old Harrison Ford voice that he has now. But anyway, so these are both pretty big developments. I mean, the Neil Blomkamp thing has sort of, like, people have known about it for a little while.
Yeah.
In January, he posted some concept art for a possible Alien sequel that he was, like, thinking about doing.
He was like, if I did this, it'd be cool, but...
Yeah, and so I think people were like, oh, wow, yeah, Neil Blomkamp, cool. That was kind of it. And then he kind of said, like, if he wants to do it, Fox will let him do it.
Right.
Is basically what happens. He just has to decide whether he wants to do it or not. And I guess he wants to do it.
Yeah, I guess there was a big enough show of support from his fans.
I think there was some demand there. I think it also might be that Chappie might not be that good. And he needs to jump onto a franchise.
Just get in immediately to something else.
Yeah, otherwise, like, he might not be able to work again.
I hope not.
I hope not, because I think...
I'm excited for Chappie.
I do want Chappie to be good. I mean, I want everything to be good.
True.
But Chappie sounds interesting, and I really love District 9.
Yeah.
You know?
Like,
I feel like everything surrounding Neil Blomkamp is just, like, leftover goodwill from District 9.
District 9.
Because nobody liked Elysium.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the other thing, too. He's only made two movies.
That's true.
Well, I mean, well, three as of 2 weeks from now or whatever.
Yes,
whenever that
Chappie
comes
out in like a week.
Yeah. So, I mean, he doesn't have, like, a track record, so we don't, like, yeah, I don't know.
Right. So
but
far,
District 9 was so good.
Yeah, so far, District 9 was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, we're both big fans of District 9. Elysium, I thought, was basically fun.
Yeah.
But it's not something I want to watch again.
No, it came close. Like, yeah. Sort of.
There's, I think, a lot of interesting elements in Elysium.
Yeah.
That ultimately go nowhere. I remember when I saw the movie, my first response was like, well, that was short. Because that movie's like 97 minutes.
And, is it really?
Yeah. And I remember that summer, it was like summer 2013, and that summer specifically had so many, like, terrible blockbuster movies that were like 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And along came Elysium, which wasn't that great. But it was 97 minutes,
so okay,
and it had some okay ideas,
right?
So I remember coming out of it like, "All right, yeah,
I could take that, I guess."
But you know, after some time, I've been like, "Yeah, that's pretty dumb,
not so good."
But anyway, Chappie's coming out in March.
But back to Ridley Scott things.
Chappie's coming out in March, and Neil Blomkamp.
Presumably, his next movie will be Alien.
His next movie will be Alien, but it's weird that he's like talking about. It might just be like publicity for Chappie. Maybe get that like.
Yeah,
rolling a little bit.
All on top
but
of
it seems like
other.
Every like press junket he has for Chappie just turns into an Alien conversation. So I don't know how
maybe
that reflects.
It's a strategy.
Yeah, I don't know how that reflects in the movie at hand.
Yeah, good point.
But you know, I think the idea of Sigourney Weaver returning as Ripley is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's also supposedly there were reports that it was going to ignore completely Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection.
Right.
That's apparently not the case.
Oh, okay.
So I guess
that's last I heard.
Yeah. So I guess what he said was that he wants to make a spiritual sequel to Alien and Aliens, so he doesn't want to undo Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection, but he's probably going to ignore them.
Make it in the vein of Alien and Aliens.
Yeah. So, okay. They, like, whatever he makes will probably have nothing to do with Alien 3 or Resurrection.
Right.
It'll be like Superman Returns.
Yeah.
Which only focused on Superman 1 and 2, but ignored 3 and 4.
Right.
So it's actually a perfect analogy.
Good job, Mike.
But, you know, I think Superman Returns could get away with that because it was a sort of reboot.
Yeah, this is it's not a reboot. It's a sequel.
A straight sequel with the main character reprising her role.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good point. So that'll be weird because she's in all four of them, right?
Yeah, all four.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Whatever.
But yeah, and then Denis Villeneuve directing Blade Runner 2. Harrison Ford is returning. Mm-hmm. Also returning is the original Blade Runner co-writer, Hampton Fancher. And it takes place decades after the original. It's going to have to because Harrison Ford is decades older.
Now he's super old.
Yeah, and it will be shooting in summer 2016.
Wow, that's okay.
Yeah, so I would shooting in summer 2016, I assume, for a 2017 release.
Yeah.
Would make sense.
One would assume.
Yeah, because that's... about right for whatever Star Wars stuff Harrison Ford needs to get done, I would think.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably...
I feel like they've got to be done already for
they're probably
that, right?
Finished filming by now,
yeah.
I would imagine. But you never know. He could, like...
Do some reshoots or something.
Could do some reshoots. I mean, by, you know, December 2015, that's when that movie comes out. So then he'll have, like, until, like, another 6 months before he has to shoot Blade Runner 2.
Right.
But, yeah, it's cool. I think it's... I don't know. Blade Runner doesn't really need a sequel.
No, I don't. No, yeah.
You know, it's a. I mean, there's a really vast world that you could explore in there. So I
there
think
is.
You can potentially make a sequel. I don't think you need to continue the story of Harrison Ford's character, Rick Deckard, especially because at the end of Blade Runner, it's an ambiguous ending about whether he's a replicant or not.
Right.
And so
I guess
I feel like a sequel would confirm whether he is or not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird.
And so for a lot of people, that might ruin like the ending of Blade
Runner.
The
effect of Blade Runner, yeah.
I think
you're right, though, that it would be cool to see another movie in that world, not necessarily a sequel.
Exactly. Possibly a Prometheus-esque prequel.
Spiritual successor prequel thing.
Although, I mean, Prometheus was... What did you think of Prometheus?
I liked it when I... When I saw it, like, the first time, I was like, yeah, it was awesome. And then I watched it with a bunch of friends, and we were like, This doesn't make sense. And now I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. I've only seen Prometheus once. I saw it in theaters. And, you know, it's been 3 years since Prometheus came out.
Really?
Yeah, it came out in 2012. Wow. That's so weird.
That is weird. You're right. Yeah. I remember being so excited for that.
Yeah. Look, that was like, so, there was so much hype, so much buildup for Prometheus.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were disappointed. I quite enjoyed Prometheus for like its first two thirds. I think the first like two thirds of that movie are like some really fun sci-fi horror stuff. Mm-hmm. Like it really harkens back to the original Alien.
It does.
And I think that movie is like visually one of the best movies I've ever seen.
It does look beautiful. It is very beautiful.
Yeah. Like I think it's one of Ridley Scott's best movies in years.
Did you see it in 3D?
Yes, I did.
That scene when Michael Fassbender turns on the star map thing?
Yes.
So, oh, yeah, that was awesome.
It was so good. But in any case, yeah, I liked Prometheus, but there's definitely problems with it. I'm not saying there's not.
It's not perfect.
But I think something like that for Blade Runner would probably be the better way to go.
Would probably be way cooler, yeah.
But I think Denis Villeneuve is a talented director. He directed Enemy, which I wasn't that crazy about.
Yeah, I didn't
but
see.
There's a like it's a cool concept, and there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
He also directed Prisoners with Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Right.
So I think you know.
I think what you're saying is we're gonna get Jake Gyllenhaal in Blade Runner 2.
That's quite possible.
It's possible.
You never know. Actually, that would be. Did you see Nightcrawler?
No.
Okay, Jake Gyllenhaal is in Nightcrawler, and he delivers like the performance of his life in that.
Really?
Movie.
That's it. Yeah. He should just stop acting. Let's like, shut it down.
But he's so perfect. He's so perfect. Okay. And there's another movie he's in where he's playing a boxer. It's coming out soon. I forget the name of the movie, but I've seen pictures of it, and he looks like nothing like what he usually looks like.
Really?
Like he's like totally ripped.
Wow.
But like he's doing a Christian Bale-esque
transformation
in many of his roles now, which is cool.
That's cool. Yeah. As long as it works.
Yeah. So I mean, if. Like, if they cast Jake Gyllenhaal off Blade Runner 2, I'd actually be kind of excited. That'd be pretty wild.
We'll see. Time will tell.
But in any case, that's the Ridley Scott franchise news.
Yep.
Moving on, I just wanted to mention briefly, they announced a director for the Lego Movie 2. It is Rob Schraub, who has been Dan Harmon's longtime writing partner. He's also directed many episodes of Community. So that's cool.
So like, I think he'll fit in perfectly with
the... Yeah, no, I'm actually pretty excited for that. Like, I think... in an ideal world, Phil Lord and Chris Miller would come back for the Lego Movie 2.
Right.
They are still producing it. And as far as I know, they're still co-writing
it. They're still going to be involved.
Yes. But
what if Dan Harmon also co-writes?
Oh, my God. Dude.
That would be awesome.
That would be so good. Like, the Lego Movie was pretty meta already.
Exactly. Like, it's... like yeah. It's. I didn't even realize that the story is literally meta.
But yeah, so Rob Schraub is a very funny guy, and he's a talented director. So.
It's going to turn out that Will Ferrell is like a Ken doll being played within another dollhouse. Some Twilight Zone shit.
Dolls within dolls within dolls.
It's going to be awesome.
Yes, so I just wanted to briefly mention that because I thought that was pretty cool. Rob, I think it's his feature debut as a director.
Okay.
He's mostly worked in TV or in comic books. So yeah,
interesting.
It's pretty cool. In any case, I want to move past that.
Yep.
And speaking of the Lego movie, let's discuss the best part of the Oscars.
Would you happen to be speaking about Everything is Awesome?
I would happen to be speaking about that. The Oscars were this past Sunday. Mike, did you watch the Oscars?
No, I missed it.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, no, I'm prepared. It's fine. We got this.
We got this. Well, I watched the Oscars.
Oh, okay. See, you got it covered.
So, I mean, I just wanted to go down a couple of the highlights of the show. The highlight for me was the performance of Everything is Awesome from the Lego Movie with Tegan and Sarah and the Lonely Island.
Like a lot of other people, too.
Yeah. throughout, Will Arnett came out as Batman.
Yep.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo,
who
did the score for the Lego Movie, came out in a Lego Devo hat.
It was awesome.
Questlove was drumming.
For some reason.
Yeah.
But okay, I'm down.
Yeah, and it was... the Oscars are generally like this...
super serious.
The super serious affair.
Yeah.
And like, it can be fun. Like, I generally enjoy them.
Right.
But like, they're just this general, like, you know, this is the Oscars, and here we are, presenting awards to ourselves.
Right.
But for like that brief 3 minutes, it became like the coolest thing of all time.
Yeah, it was so doofy, but amazing.
Yeah.
And they handed out the Lego Oscars.
Yes, they made the Lego Oscars.
That was really cool.
I saw, because obviously the Lego Movie was not nominated for Best Animated Feature. So this was like, their big like triumphant moment.
Yeah,
was this performance
this is happening?
And I saw Chris Miller tweeted afterwards a picture of Clint Eastwood, Bradley Cooper, and I think Oprah.
Okay,
might have been Oprah. Might have been somebody else. I might be making that up. But they were all holding Lego Oscars, and he was like, "Oh, come on!" Like, seriously, guys,
that's awesome. I like it.
But Everything Is Awesome did lose the Best Original Song Oscar.
Yeah,
but it deservedly lost it because Common and John Legend also performed song from Selma, Glory, and that performance was also amazing. Like, it was just an incredible performance. Neil Patrick Harris was the host of the Oscars. And
I've heard some mixed things.
I think he did a fine job. Okay. I think, I don't know, maybe it's just because I really enjoy bad jokes.
That might be it. That might be...
But, like, after...
You may not be a fair representation of audience.
Like, I really, almost every joke he had after the opening number fell flat.
Really?
And I thought it was really funny.
Oh,
But, like, the, when J.K. Simmons won his Oscar, this is my favorite joke, when J.K. Simmons won his Oscar, Neil Patrick Harris came out and went, "He won an Oscar." Bum, 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 bum.
That's amazing. And nobody laughed?
Yeah, that was just dead silence.
Oh, come on. That's awesome.
And there were a lot worse ones, but that was...
I like that one. That's really good.
But he did have an opening number about the movie industry, as he always, whenever Neil Patrick Harris hosts something, there's always an opening number.
Yeah,
and I thought it was pretty good. It was him and Kendrick and Jack Black.
Okay,
It was fun. That's cool. Enjoyable. It name checked the movie Clue, which was
really
pretty awesome.
I'm into that.
But yeah, in any case, that was kind of the show. There were some very passionate speeches in the show. Particularly, so many of the speeches were about, non-film things. It was about, various other things. And Patricia Arquette had a really great one about equality of women's rights.
Okay.
Equal pay. It inspired, this really great gift-worthy moment of Meryl Streep and Jennifer Lopez being like, yeah!
That's awesome.
But that was a really passionate, really moving speech. And also, Graham Moore, who wrote The Imitation Game, had this really great speech. He's a really young guy, in his early 20s.
Really?
And he had this really great speech about, how he tried to kill himself when he was a kid, and how, it was this really deep thing. And, then it was a really emotional speech, and it was the first time I had ever wanted to watch The Imitation Game because of that guy's speech.
Wow.
So, mission accomplished.
I guess that worked, but you should watch Imitation Game either way.
Have you seen it?
No.
Yeah. No, I mean,
I'm really interested in it, though.
I've heard some solid things about The Imitation Game. I have not seen that yet. Of the Best Picture nominees, I've seen 5 of the 8.
Okay.
So the ones I haven't seen so far are American Sniper, The Theory of Everything, and The Imitation Game.
Imitation Game.
American Sniper I have actually wanted to see and just have not gotten around to it. That's been scheduling-wise.
In your busy, busy life.
Exactly. The Imitation Game and Theory of Everything I've kind of consciously skipped because, I don't know,
it's just British people doing British things.
It's British biopics of, very important people. Who are
they are, though.
I know, but they just feel like very Oscar bait movies. They don't feel something I really want to see. It seems like something designed to win awards as opposed to designed to tell a story.
Fair enough.
But I've heard of the two.
Not to discount them.
Yeah, not to discount. I'm sure they're good.
Yeah.
Of the two, I've heard better things about The Imitation Game than The Theory of Everything.
Even though Eddie Redmayne won.
Even though Eddie Redmayne did win, which, he beat Michael Keaton for Birdman, which is a travesty.
That is a travesty.
Yeah.
He was robbed.
Somebody pointed out.
Who haven't seen the movie.
As two people who haven't seen the movie.
Yeah.
Eddie Redmayne does not deserve that award. Although somebody pointed out that Eddie Redmayne's voice from The Theory of Everything, they played the clip before the Best Actor thing.
Yeah.
And they played the clip of Eddie Redmayne in The Theory of Everything. And somebody pointed out he's doing the exact same voice in that movie as he does in Jupiter Ascending.
Really? The whisper until it's time to shout?
I mean, I imagine he's not shouting in The Theory of Everything.
Yeah,
but he has a very similar whisper in both movies.
That's awesome.
And in Jupiter Ascending, he gives a terrible performance.
Right.
So it's I think context is everything, man.
Yeah. Deep. So deep.
He can give the same performance in one movie, and then he can win an Oscar. And he can give the same performance in a different movie.
And be in Jupiter Ascending.
And be in Jupiter Ascending.
Wow.
But in any case, Birdman won Best Picture.
Yes.
Which is nuts.
I know. My friend texted me and was like, "I don't believe it, man." And I was like, that was clearly the Best Picture. And he's like, "No, but it was so weird. How did that win?"
Yeah, I had no... So Birdman, it looked like Birdman was going to do really well at the Oscars leading up to it, because it won like a bunch of other stuff, like the DGAs.
Did it win the BAFTA too or something like that? Although, why would that win the BAFTA?
It might have. The BAFTA doesn't exclusively honor British movies.
Yeah.
But I think I don't know all the awards Birdman won. But it won a bunch. Mm-hmm. And leading up to it, it looked like it was going to be between Boyhood and Birdman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think between the two movies, I would probably have given it to Boyhood.
Okay.
Partially because of the achievement of, you know, making a movie 12 years. Spending 12 years to make a movie.
Right.
And partially because that movie really hits me on an emotional level.
Mm-hmm.
Birdman doesn't really hit me on an emotional level, but it hits me on a creative, passionate level.
Right.
I get really engaged in Birdman.
Yes.
And as a creative and technical feat, that's also pretty stunning because it's, you know, made to look as if it's one continuous shot.
Right.
Even though it's, it's not.
Obviously,
But most of the, that doesn't discount that most of the shots are, 5-6 minute takes.
Or very long takes,
And that are stitched together to make it look like they're
all together.
All together. So they are still really long shots.
Yeah.
In any case, Birdman is such a bizarre Oscar winner.
Yeah.
Even I actually said, I think I said on this podcast that we shouldn't discount Birdman from Best Picture because it's a story about actors going through very difficult struggles.
Yeah, you did say that.
And I guess I was right.
You were right. Yeah.
I don't think I actually expected it to win because it's such a weird movie.
It's so bizarre. I don't know. I loved every second of it. When
it's such if you look at the movies that have won Oscars in the past, they're very stoic. A lot of them, I should say. Not every movie.
Yeah.
But I would say this is the most vibrant, alive movie to win an Oscar since probably No Country for Old Men.
That has none of the same things.
Yeah, but it's also, I think, the best picture winner since No Country for Old Men, also,
right.
I would also say. Because since then, there's been Slumdog Millionaire, which I don't like.
I've never actually seen that.
Really?
Yeah.
Some of them, I generally like Danny Boyle, and I do not like Slumdog Millionaire. Then there's The Hurt Locker, which I also don't care for.
I love that one.
Okay. The King's Speech, which I think is fine.
Liked it. Oscar movie.
The Artist, which is also
Oscar movie.
Fine. Argo, which is fine. And
which I think they gave just because they couldn't give him Best Director.
Well, no. Argo was also a movie. Argo was literally a movie about Hollywood coming to save the day.
Oh my god, that's so perfect. Yeah, you're right.
And there's 12 Years a Slave, which is pretty good.
Yes, I'll give that one.
It's a very solid movie.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Steve McQueen's best, but I think it's a good movie. It's a very powerful film. But I think Birdman is easily the best since No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very deserving winner. You know, I think of the movies nominated, I probably would have given it to Whiplash.
Yeah, I was so excited for Birdman to win. I was like, yes, not that I called it, but I was pumped for it. And then Whiplash came out and I watched it, on DVD and Blu-ray, and I think Whiplash should have won.
I mean, I don't think Whiplash ever had a chance of winning.
No, but it should have. It's so much, they're both so good. There was something about Whiplash that just made me...
Yes. It's very energetic.
Invigorated. Yes. I was so excited, and J.K. Simmons is just pure evil. It's awesome. I don't know.
But Whiplash is awesome. That actually pulled off an upset at the awards because it won Best Film Editing over Boyhood.
Yeah, which is weird.
Which was that was awesome because Whiplash had some of the best editing I've seen this entire year.
Yeah.
So that was cool, and I think Boyhood does deserve recognition for its editing.
Mm-hmm.
But
considering they had 12 years of footage.
Yeah. Well,
not 12 years of footage.
But... 2 weeks of footage for every 12 years or for every
whatever.
Year,
yeah.
For 12 years, but still, it's that's a long time to compile footage and you know, they shot so much and
who knows what movie they're gonna make with all that footage.
Exactly. They shot so much and kind of edited together as it kind of happened.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Boyhood is still a tremendous movie. I think a
tremendous feat. Yeah.
And it only won one Oscar. It won Best Supporting Actress for Patricia Arquette.
Really? That's it?
Yep. Actually, one of the interesting things about this year's Oscars that somebody on Twitter pointed out to me was that every movie nominated for Best Picture got at least one award.
Wow.
So
that's pretty weird.
Yeah, Theory of Everything won Best Actor for Eddie Redmayne.
Mm-hmm.
Boyhood got Best Supporting Actress. Birdman won a bunch.
Yeah.
Grand Budapest Hotel also won a bunch.
Yeah.
It won four awards.
Mm-hmm.
What else was nominated? American Sniper got sound mixing.
Which is bizarre.
The Imitation Game got screenplay. Whiplash got Supporting Actor and Editing, and I think another sound award.
I think that won the sound.
Yes. And then what else was nominated? How many did
I don't I don't know. I lost track. But they all won a thing, so good job.
They all won something.
That's good.
So yeah. Anyway, that's the Oscars.
Yeah, that's that.
All right. Let's so do you want to move on?
Yeah, let's do
move
it.
On. All right, guys. We are going to move on into our review of The Lazarus Effect.
Same dream.
Good morning, Dr. McConnell.
Good morning, James.
This whole process started with the Lazarus Serum.
The goal here is simple, to bring someone back from the dead.
About one. In 3, 2, 1.
No effect.
Maybe if we up the dosage next time, if we up...
You are playing God with a bunch of dead animals. If we're going to be asking big questions, we have to be ready for the answers.
That was from the trailer for The Lazarus Effect, the newest film by director David Gelb, who was the director of the documentary Jiro Dreams of Sushi. It stars Mark Duplass, Olivia Wilde, Donald Glover, Evan Peters, and Sarah Bolger. And I think what drew us to this movie is really that cast.
Yeah.
The reason we decided to review this movie specifically is because if you look at that cast...
I'm in. I want that movie.
If you look at that cast and don't know anything about the movie...
Yes.
You don't know the title. You don't know what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
I think you would assume, like, indie romantic comedy drama.
It has to be. There's no other option.
And instead, it's this horror movie.
It's the exact opposite of that.
The exact opposite. So I guess... I think we're just going to briefly talk about our reactions to the film.
Yeah.
And then move on to spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of like specific scenes that we want to talk about.
Yeah.
So, Mike, why don't you start first? How did you enjoy The Lazarus Effect?
So, my thoughts are they should have made the romantic comedy drama. Because The Lazarus Effect, I don't want to say is, like, useless. But we have so many movies that are this plot. Of the med students who are trying to create a thing that will ping people back from the dead. One of their loved ones dies. They use it on that person, and then they come back from the dead.
Yeah.
And evil shit happens. That's happened. Like, we've got this already. You could say this plot's been resurrected too many times.
Oh, man.
Nailed it. So that's my opinion. I don't know. It just wasn't good. None of the scares were scary other than... It's loud. It's 100% jump scares.
Yeah, a lot of it is jump scares. You know, every generation gets the Frankenstein story they deserve.
Yeah. I feel like we've been robbed.
I feel like it's like all we have is this and I Frankenstein.
We've been Eddie Redmayne.
Well, no, Eddie Redmayne got it. We've much beaten because we've been
okay.
robbed.
Okay, true. All right, fair enough.
Yeah, no, but that said, you know, this is a cast we really like.
Yeah, like they weren't... acting wasn't bad.
I think it's super weird to see Donald Glover like in a
that was
movie.
Kind of I was just like, oh, there's another weird Abed and Troy thing, but
this actually
it wasn't.
The Lazarus Effect would be a perfect 30-second yeah. Tag on an episode of Community.
It
as,
would
like,
be
a fake movie that Abed and Troy were making.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, so this is basically I likened it to Frankenstein a few seconds ago.
Mm-hmm,
but
I mean,
the movie likens itself to Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Several times. There's, like, first off, Mark Duplass' character is named Frank.
Shit, I didn't even realize that. Wow.
So there's that.
Yep.
And then there's one point where Evan Peters is, like, looking at a dog and shouting, "It's alive! It's alive!"
After they bring Rocky back.
Yes.
Rocky the dog.
So basically the plot of this movie is that these med students are working on this serum to bring people and animals back from the dead.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I think the coolest part of this is the opening credit sequence.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird imagery there.
Yeah, like, it's a lot of ferrofluid.
Unsettlingly. I think you said, what did you say when we saw it? Like, whoever made this movie really liked American Horror Story.
Yeah, it's basically just like weird, like disjointed music over close-ups of weird shit wiggling. and then the movie just starts.
Right.
Which was awesome. Like, that was really cool. And Evan Peters is in it, so he will never escape American Horror Story.
Apparently. Yeah, Evan Peters is such a weirdly popular actor, I think.
Yeah, like,
I've never seen a second of American Horror Story.
Okay.
It just seems
like... So he's just Quicksilver for you.
For me, he's Quicksilver and, like, Kick-Ass's friend. Kick-Ass's second friend.
Second, the other friend, yeah. Right.
The one who isn't Clark Duke.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's... I remember, like, a few months ago, like, Happy Birthday Evan Peters was trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I was like, is Evan Peters that popular of an actor where his birthday is trending on Twitter?
I don't know if he's in... I think he's in season three... The Freak Show, whatever. I think he's
in all of them.
I think he's
I was actually looking at his filmography just to see, like, what happened.
Yeah, like, how did this happen?
Like, how did he become such a big name?
Where did he come from?
He's in, like, every season of American Horror Story.
Yeah, I mean, he's good and he's great in at least season one, which is the only one that I've watched all the way through. And he's, like, really good looking, so it makes sense that he'd be really popular.
He's one of those Tumblr actors.
That's what I was going to say. He's probably super popular in Tumblr.
But in any case, and... I mean, Mark Duplass and Olivia Wilde are, like, I feel like, it just seems like they should probably just be making, like, a mumblecore, like...
Yeah, just some low-budget shit. It would be awesome.
Like, yeah, like, if, I don't know, like, I think there's a good movie in The Lazarus Effect. I feel like there's, you have that cast.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the writing or, like... there's something wrong with this movie. Like, it's so close. Like, not that it's very close, but it has all of the right elements, and it just falls flat somewhere.
I think its scares are very basic. They're all, like, stuff you've seen before.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, atmospherically, it's, like...
It is pretty spooky.
Like,
when the lights are flickering and you can't see anything. And like, but that's a trick we've seen already, like...
Yeah, it's
gonna be over your shoulder. Look out!
Everything in this movie seems like stuff we've seen before, and even certain scenes just seem like they're taken directly from certain movies.
Yeah,
And I'll probably talk about that in spoilers,
mm-hmm. And not even like in an homage kind of way.
Yeah, like it seems like it's taken directly from other stuff.
Yeah. What was the quote in the AV Club review of it when he said, because there's a scene where they talk about the myth of the use 10% of your brain thing.
Yes,
and then. At the end of the AV Club article, he said this movie is made for an audience only using 10% of its brain.
Boom.
And I think he's right. It's very basic. It's not clever.
So that was an AV Club review by A.A. Dowd, who is the managing editor of film editor of the AV Club. I figured I should just throw that in there.
Fair enough.
Credit where it's due. But yeah, that was a very good review. In any case, I think we should move into spoilers.
Yeah.
Because there is some stuff I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And
let's talk about some things.
All right. So we're going to be moving into spoilers for The Lazarus Effect starting right now.
Sorry. Can't say.
What's that word you use?
Spoilers.
I like that word.
Spoilers.
What?
Read ahead. Spoil all the surprises. Not peeking at the end.
Isn't traveling with you one big spoiler?
So, Mike, yesterday I watched a movie about a young woman who was able to access more than 10% of her brain. And once she reaches 100% capacity, she's able to use psychic powers and manipulate others and do crazy shit with her mind.
Right.
But enough about Lucy.
Oh, man. Yeah. Why is this in this movie? I don't understand.
Yeah, so about halfway through The Lazarus Effect,
mm-hmm.
They introduced the concept that the human being only uses 10% of their brain.
Right.
But
not really.
But Donald Glover's like, that's not actually true.
Right.
Because you only use 10% of your brain at a time. Which is also not true.
Right. No. Not how that works.
But
it sounds sciencey.
It sounds sciencey. Which is basically, it's the same premise as Lucy.
Right.
The Luc Besson movie from earlier this summer, which is a movie I really enjoyed.
I think you're the only one that liked that movie.
I may be in the minority on that one, but I think Lucy took a really dumb concept, like aggressively stupid concept,
right,
and made it into a really fun movie. And I think The Lazarus Effect takes the same dumb concept and just continues to be dumb.
It just doesn't go anywhere with it.
I think
you're right.
Like, it has the same, like, in Lucy, I was able to kind of ignore the 10% of your brain thing and just assume, like, oh, she has superpowers now.
Right, yeah.
And that's kind of like,
that's fine.
That's all it is. But here it's like, she accessed 10% of her brain, but it's, that feels so unnecessary to what it is.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if she just came back from the dead.
And was, like, possessed or something.
And was possessed or something. Or, like, that's fine.
That's okay, yeah.
Like, I could.
I'm like, okay with that.
Like, you added, like, the pseudoscience nonsense just to make it sound like it could happen. But it can't. You know? She's controlling the lights with her mind.
Yeah. Like, that's not how that works.
And then there's... So, one of the scenes that was directly gripped from something I thought was like that I was referring to earlier. So one of the things in the movie is that she's like reliving her childhood trauma.
Right.
And it never makes it clear whether she's actually in hell or whether she's just reliving
trapped in memory.
Yeah, trapped in memories. And it seems like it's one for a while, and then it seems like it's another one of those for a while. And it never actually...
Yeah, and then like...
It's never clear whether
and then
that's
a person
the case.
Goes to it. Like, I don't, that didn't make sense.
Yes.
like, what?
Yeah, the Sarah Bolger's character just ends up inside that trapped memory or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, because she's not dead.
Yeah.
like, that doesn't make sense.
But in any case, that... The hallway with the little girl in it just seemed very reminiscent of The Shining.
Yeah. Oh, your dolls are on fire. Ooh, spooky.
Yeah. like, it just seemed like it's I don't know. There's also another, this isn't a horror movie shot, but there was another shot that looked, that seemed ripped off directly from Breaking Bad. I don't know if you caught that one.
I don't know.
But it's a scene where Olivia Wilde's on, like, the couch, like, lying on the couch. And then she just starts rising.
Oh, yeah.
And it looked exactly like Jesse Pinkman on heroin.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. right. And he gets lifted off the bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was a weird...
Yeah, didn't even catch that. You're right.
But in any case, yeah. And then there's just so many silly scenes in this movie.
yeah.
I think... Right. So at the end of the movie, they bring a dog back to life.
Right.
And the dog is acting weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's... And instead of keeping it in the lab...
They take it
where
home
they,
with
where
them.
They probably should keep it. They said, oh, the dog's acting weird. We should take it home.
Let's bring it home.
You know,
that's
how scientists' brains operate.
yeah.
So they keep the dog at the home. And then, like, while Olivia Wilde is sleeping, the dog just climbs up on the bed and watches her sleep.
yeah, for like an uncomfortably long shot.
yeah. But then here's the thing.
It's only like a couple of seconds, but it's enough.
Here's the thing. That dog escapes, like, halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't think we ever see it again.
I think it's implied she kills it. Because she's in the bathroom and he's like growling at her, and then there's like you hear like a yelp. Well, this camera's out in the hallway, and then it doesn't ever comes back.
Okay, I might have missed that.
all right, you might have zoned out for a second.
I might have been like, oh, I'm done with this movie. I'm tired. I don't remember that. And I feel like,
but
they,
it's never like addressed. Really.
They never mention the dog again.
Ever.
After,
nobody
after
ever. nobody after that scene. The dog's just gone.
Yeah.
Like nobody's then, like, wait, where's the dog?
Yeah,
it's just gone.
And then like and then basically the rest of the movie is just Olivia Wilde killing everybody.
Yeah, but in like the stupidest ways.
Right. So she kills Donald Glover by like
the filing cabinet.
Yeah.
Well,
she, like, psychically puts him into the filing cabinet and then just closes the filing cabinet.
Yeah,
around.
And crushes.
She kills Evan Peters by, like,
oh,
shooting a
God.
Vape down his throat.
yeah, I forgot about that. I don't understand. He's like, the stoner, I guess? Because he's, like, got the long... I mean, he's always, like, he has long hair and all, like, shaggy hair.
Yeah.
But he, like, they make a thing about him smoking and, like, when Rocky has his first thing where he breaks out of the cage and, like, explodes the fridge or whatever.
Right.
The dog. And he's like, no, I wasn't even smoking, man, I swear. But he's clearly smoking, like, a blue cigarette, which isn't, like, marijuana. Like, I don't understand, like,
yeah,
what are they trying
like,
to imply about that?
It's very weird.
It seems like whoever wrote this read a whole bunch of Wikipedia pages and was like, I can make a movie out of these. like that. And then the whole DMT thing. Which doesn't really make sense. I mean, they make a point of saying that the basis of the Lazarus serum is DMT,
right.
Which is a psychedelic or hallucinogenic substance or chemical that your body... And that's actually true. When you die, your body is flooded. Your brain releases all this DMT into your body.
Right.
So you kind of, like, just trip balls while you're dying, I guess, which is weird. So nobody really knows why that happens, but they make the basis of the... Lazarus serum that so that they flood the body with DMT and then electrocute them and they come back to life or whatever.
right.
But, like, that somehow gives her psychic powers. like what? So it feels like somebody read a bunch of articles or Wikipedia pages and was like, oh, I'll take that. DMT sounds cool. I'll put that in here. Oh, he vapes. He must be a stoner. Okay, that's that. like, <what? laughs> get it.
Yes. All right. Let's talk about the ending of this movie.
Okay.
So basically everyone's dead except for Sarah Bolger, and she's trapped inside Olivia Wilde's like tortured mindset.
Right.
So I guess when Olivia Wilde was a child, a wild child, when Olivia Wilde was a child, she, as a kid, was in like this fire and like a bunch of people died in the fire.
Right.
And the revelation at the end of the movie is that she actually started the fire when she was a kid.
Yeah.
Which is dumb. Like, it just it makes it seem like the lesson of the movie is kids don't play with matches
or you'll go to hell. Like,
yeah.
Whoa.
But it's whatever. It gives it like a personal emotional connection.
Yeah.
Whatever. Sarah Bolger talks to kid Olivia Wilde.
Mm-hmm. Who's in the hallway with her.
Who's in the hallway that she can see for some reason. And then...
Right. That doesn't make sense.
And gets her to, like... I guess...
The whole thing is she couldn't save people that were trapped in an apartment.
Right. And then I guess she gets kid Olivia Wilde to open the door.
To save them.
And it's all, like, an illusion.
Yeah.
But it gets Olivia Wilde's, like, mindset free or whatever. Right. She's, like, able to pass on.
Pass the trauma, yeah.
Pass the trauma and, like, move on. And then, nope.
JK.
Like, and then that happens, and then Sarah Bolger's there, and Olivia Wilde's dead.
Right.
And then,
which
like,
think like oh, her, because they make a point of saying, like, oh, the DMT, in earlier, they say the DMT opens the doorway for your soul to move on, and her soul is trapped, and she finally opens the doorway. So she actually dies, and, like, it's peaceful, and that's it.
Yes. But then, nope.
JK, she's a fireman.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, then a bunch of firemen come in.
To save them.
And Sarah Bolger's like, oh, thank God you're here. I'm so, it's like she's dead. And then she looks over, and Olivia Wilde's body is gone. And she's like, what? And then she looks at the fireman, and it's Olivia Wilde.
Oh, that was the silliest scene.
And then Olivia Wilde snaps her neck, and then she's dead.
That's it.
And then Olivia Wilde just, like...
It looks like she was going to bring all of them back.
Yeah, I mean, she starts with Mark Duplass, and then Mark Duplass, like...
Jolts off the table
and breathes into life, and then the movie ends.
Yeah, like what? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's a really dumb ending because it
also
it negates like the entire emotional crux of the movie.
Yeah. So no matter what, humans are evil, is what you're saying. Like, even if you move past your trauma and accept and become like an adjusted person, you're still evil deep down.
Yeah,
I guess maybe this is what happens when we access 100% of our brains. We're too evil for our own good.
Yeah, we need Morgan Freeman to guide us through it.
Oh, don't we all? But also, I just realized, doesn't Olivia Wilde use all of the serum? How could she have any... Oh, she plugs into her blood. Never mind. Never, I realize my own stupidity.
Well, that's more than this movie did, so... So there's that.
Yeah.
And I mean, director David Gelb, I think this is his first narrative feature. His only, I think, feature-length credit before this is Jiro Dreams of Sushi, which is a documentary.
I like that callback to it.
Yeah, there's a scene where they eat sushi.
and, like, make a point of showing the sushi and that they're eating sushi.
So there's that.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's interesting. I've never seen Jiro Dreams of Sushi, but I've heard it's very good.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, maybe you should stick to doing documentaries. Because like, it seems like more
not so good.
Or in any case, like, I don't know, just as a horror film, I think Lazarus Effect fails on many levels.
Yeah. It's not scary other than loud things, which is the cheapest kind of scary.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's the Lazarus Effect. Mike, do you have anything to add before we move on to recommendations?
No, but I hope that some romantic comedy indie director sees this cast and just is like, whoop, takes it.
Yeah,
and puts it in his movie.
Like, I would love if it turned out, like, while they were from the Lazarus Effect, they just filmed, like...
Also filmed a romantic comedy.
Yeah, just, like, on their off hours.
Oh, that'd be great. One can only hope.
Like, Mark Duplass, he's like, hey, me and my brother will shoot something.
Yeah, we'll make a movie.
Whatever. You guys want to be on Togetherness?
Have you been watching Togetherness?
I'm, like, 2 weeks behind, but I have been watching Togetherness. And it's very good.
Yeah. I like it a lot. All right.
All right.
Move on.
On that note, let's move on to our recommendations for the week.
Mm-hmm.
So Mike and I both have recommendations. I feel like recommendations is too too specific of a word at this point.
Okay.
Because last week I talked about Jupiter Ascending, which is a movie I hated.
And you hated it.
And this week I'm going to be talking about a movie that I didn't love, but I'm going to be like, yeah, all right.
Okay.
So I feel like...
Suggestions, baby.
Perhaps suggestions. Perhaps... movies we watched and kind of want to talk about
that we don't want to do a full review of.
Yeah, so I guess, Mike, why don't you go first? So what is your recommendation for the week? And I know yours is actually a recommendation.
Mine's an actual recommendation. So my recommendation for the week is Blue Ruin. It's directed by Jeremy Saulnier, starring Macon Blair, Devin Rattray, and Eve Plum. Rattray is an amazing name. So it's been on Netflix for a while. I had read some articles about it, or had heard of it at least a few times. And basically, it's a revenge story So it's about a guy,
right,
who's, you know, got nothing left to lose. He's actually homeless at the very beginning of the movie. Turns out someone who had done some bad things to his family is getting out of prison on a plea bargain or whatever, parole or something. And he just goes on revenge, like, just, that's it. He kind of snaps and he goes on a revenge rampage for the next hour and a half, which is awesome. The movie's only 90 minutes, so it wraps up very neatly.
Mm.
It's great. But it's a very slow burn. It's like a super slow burn because the main character doesn't talk much because he's like alone the whole time, like for a lot of it.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of just watching him survive, like just like walking around doing stuff. I don't know. It was really cool, but it's very ominous. And the setup of him not doing anything, of him just kind of sitting in a house and waiting for people to show up, makes the like just graphic ultraviolence so much more powerful. Like out of nowhere, like he stabs a dude, and then we just watch him bleed out. And it's like, what the, like, what for so long? Like, and it's so crazy. I don't know. So that makes it really cool. Like the punctuation of the ultraviolence is that much more potent, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but. Because it's juxtaposed against just a silence and him sitting, like, looking at his face, just sitting there waiting. And he's a phenomenal, acts it phenomenally, or does a phenomenal job acting. so, yeah. And I say mumblecore, I think it's a mumblecore movie, because they make a point of, like, referencing the fact that he gets help from somebody who sells him, his old high school friend or something, sells him a gun or gives him a gun.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, if you're doing this, it's going to be personal, man. You don't have no time for big speeches or nothing. Like, you know, and they don't really talk in any grandiose way or at all.
Okay.
So, I don't know. It's really cool. All
right. And yeah.
People should check it out.
Yeah, I've heard awesome things about Blue Ruin. Basically, I think somebody described it as a No Country for Old Men if the main character is an idiot.
Yeah, that's also a good point. Yes. That's the perfect description. And he's completely inept at his revenge story. He has no idea what he's doing. I don't know. So it was cool. It's cool.
Nice.
It has an added realism. My only gripe, I guess, would be his jump to just murderous rampage.
Okay.
Doesn't really make sense. Like the revenge thing. I mean, it turns into like a Southern revenge family, like family revenge thing where like, oh, you took one of mine, I'm going to take one of yours kind of thing.
Right.
But his jump to just be like willingness to kill a whole family doesn't make any sense. But it's cool.
All right. Yeah, that's Blue Ruin. I've heard awesome things, and I hope to check that out soon, too.
Do it up.
So my movie that I'm going to be talking about. So there's a film franchise out there that I'm going to say is a cultural blind spot for me.
Okay. Seems appropriate.
So, and they have a new movie coming out in April.
Mm-hmm.
And I've decided this is the time.
You're going
to
do it.
To catch up.
The time is now.
So this week I watched the original, The Fast and the Furious, for the first time.
For the first time.
First time ever.
Wow.
Outside of trailers, I've never seen a frame of a Fast and Furious movie. Like, not even anything.
Wow.
So now I've seen the first one.
Okay.
And I will be watching the rest as well.
So you're on board. You're in.
I am on board. I mean, basically, I just want to get to Fast 5 because I've heard that's where it gets great.
That's the good one.
But Fast and Furious, the first one.
Mm-hmm. What did you think?
I think it's fun.
It's good, right? Like, it's not... yeah. It's not bad.
Yeah, I think... I really enjoyed the first 40 minutes. I think that's where, like, it's really entertaining. It's really, like... That's, like, introducing you to the world of street racing.
Yeah.
It's where you get Paul Walker's character. Right. I think, actually, what hurt the movie for me...
Okay.
...is I don't think Paul Walker's character needed to be an FBI agent.
Okay. Okay.
And I realized that's
but where
like,
else is there going to be drama, man?
Well, I realized that's like the crux of the entire series.
Yeah, that's kind of the whole point.
But I think the movie was more interesting when he wasn't a rat, when he was just like a young kid trying to make it in the world of street racing with Dominic Toretto. If anything, I wanted this to be the Goodfellas of street racing as opposed to the Departed of street racing.
Whoa. Whoa.
If we're going by a Scorsese metric.
However, nowhere near as good as either of those movies.
Yeah, let's be clear. Nowhere near as good as Goodfellas and Departed. But anyway, I think for the first 40 minutes, it's like a really entertaining time.
Yeah.
I think once you add in the FBI thing. I think it's an unnecessary extra conflict.
Okay.
Because you already have, like, basically Dominic Toretto versus the Asian guy.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name.
I haven't seen that one in a long time.
I feel like most characters in Fast and Furious movies, I feel like, will probably not have names to me, and I'll just be like, that guy.
Yeah, you look like this.
Yeah. But it seems reasonable
because it's Fast and the Furious, so.
Exactly. At least that's how it is in this movie.
Yeah.
But I did really enjoy it. I think the racing scenes are a lot of fun.
This car can do wheelies. That's crazy.
And I think the ending action set piece is a lot of fun also.
I don't remember, but I'm sure.
It's like Paul Walker, like, on the side of a car, like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. For what that movie was, it was pretty awesome. Yeah.
I think it's really weird to watch that movie by itself now, because it's so, I've never seen any of the movies, but I have a vague idea of what happens in them. And it's just so weird to watch that movie and be like, this is, like, the same characters who are in Furious 7.
Yeah, like, what? I saw a picture recently. It was like, oh, if you want to feel old, this is what they were stealing in the original Fast and Furious. And it's like a picture, a screenshot of, like, when they open the back of a truck. And it's, like, all TVs and VCRs. Yeah. TVs with VCRs built in and, like, all, like, stuff like that. Like, wow. Classic.
Yeah, like, it's, like, the big set piece of Fast and Furious is, like, the ending where, like, Paul walks on the side of a car and they go down the street. And then in the trailer of Furious 7, like, Dominic Toretto drives a car through a building into another building.
Off out of a plane. Like, what? Yeah, they've gotten so ridiculous, and it doesn't really make sense. It's a huge jump they've made.
So it's sort of like a weird, it's like a small scale little thing, the Fast and Furious.
Yeah, first one. Their humble roots.
Yeah. So I think it's a really interesting watch. So I'm going to be watching the rest. I'll probably document that on this podcast.
That'll be really interesting to hear your opinion of the next six movies.
Yeah, I'm going into the next one expecting to hate it.
Too Fast, Too Furious.
I've heard that's really bad.
Yeah, but, it's not as bad as Tokyo Drift, though.
You're not a fan of Tokyo Drift?
No.
I know there are people who think Tokyo Drift is the best one.
What?
That's
amazing.
Believe me, I have thoroughly researched.
You've done
this.
Some research,
yeah. And wow. There are many who consider Tokyo Drift the best.
Wow, I may be may stand to be corrected.
Maybe, or maybe you're right. Who knows? But in any case, that's that is Fast and Furious. I also kind of wanted to briefly mention that I saw the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, which is the newest film in the SpongeBob SquarePants franchise.
Yes, it is.
And so basically, if you're a child of my generation,
right,
you're legally required to enjoy SpongeBob.
Yeah, it's kind of the rules. It's your civic duty.
No, but I'm a big fan of SpongeBob. Like, that's
as you should be.
Yeah, it's a child.
As per the bylaws.
And so I was pretty excited for this movie, mostly because Steven Hillenburg, who was the creator of SpongeBob and director of the first SpongeBob movie, was returning to co-write this movie.
Right.
And so he had left SpongeBob after the first movie came out.
Like, he was done.
Yeah, and Paul Tibbett, who directed this movie, became the showrunner of the show.
Okay.
And after Steven Hillenburg left, the show took a real downward slide, so to speak. You know, it's nowhere near as good as it used to be. And so when I found out Steven Hillenburg was doing this, I thought this could be like a return to the glory days, so to speak. And I think it's definitely better than most of later day SpongeBob. I was hoping for
the Church of Latter-day SpongeBob.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was hoping for like a Dan Harmon returning for season 5 of Community-esque renaissance.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite that. I would say the closest comparison is Greg Daniels returning for season 9 of The Office, where it's...
Oh, the obvious choice.
Where it's better. Like, season 9 of The Office was better than season 8 of The Office.
Right. But it's still not as good as season 1.
Still not as good as the glory days.
Right.
You know, it's not season 3. But the SpongeBob movie is so weird.
Is it really?
Yeah, like, SpongeBob is always a pretty weird show.
Yeah, I mean, it's always
But let's just say, there's a good chunk of the movie where SpongeBob and Plankton are going back in time.
Okay.
They have, like, a time machine. They're going backwards and forwards in time trying to fix, like, the problem.
Do they go to the future?
They go to... There's a scene in the movie where SpongeBob and Plankton travel to, like, the future, and they're on this, like, distant space station.
Okay.
And there's this all-powerful dolphin alien watcher who is, like, watching all of time.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah, and he's, like, watch is like the overseer of all of space, and he's like watching out, and you can see Jupiter and Saturn,
yeah,
like out there.
It's okay.
And he's like, "Oh, I am the great all powerful watcher. Can you guys?" And he like goes to the bathroom and like lets SpongeBob and SpongeBob and Plankton watch time for him for a second.
Yeah.
And Jupiter and Saturn just collapse in on themselves while he's in the bathroom.
That's
and then when he comes out and sees that, he shoots lasers at them through his blowhole.
What? That's awesome.
So there's a lot of weird stuff like that.
Holy crap.
And then the movie ends so with...
I feel like they realized that the original base of audience for SpongeBob have tried pot at some point now. And they just made a movie about that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that was a pretty bizarre...
That's so weird.
Pretty bizarre gag. It's not as good as the first SpongeBob movie, which is a masterpiece, but...
You're going to stand by that?
I'm going to stand by it.
Okay.
The SpongeBob SquarePants movie is a masterpiece of its era.
Wow.
And I think this it's the easiest comparison point between the SpongeBob SquarePants movie and this new one, the SpongeBob movie Sponge Out of Water, because they're both the SpongeBob movies.
Go on.
But I think that movie, the first SpongeBob movie, feels like a real movie.
Right.
You know, it feels like it's bigger than an episode.
Yeah.
And it has like an emotional arc throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And that arc being that SpongeBob's trying to mature and grow up as an adult.
Right.
Like be seen as somebody who's not a kid.
Uh-huh.
And then realizing at the end that being a kid is okay sometimes. Like, as you just have to be like responsible and stuff.
Do other things.
I'm overanalyzing SpongeBob. I know
it
that.
It seems really like you took that one to heart. And it's just, it hit you on a real personal level.
This new one has basically no emotional arc.
Yeah, but it's got a dolphin shooting lasers
at it. It does. But this feels like a loosely disconnected series of, like, SpongeBob
shorts.
Yeah, SpongeBob episodes. If there is an emotional arc, I would say it's Plankton's. Ever the tragic hero. Who basically has a redemptive arc throughout the movie, where he starts off as, like, the villain trying to steal the crab pie formula.
Yeah.
And it, like, and ends up saving the day in the end.
Okay.
But then the movie completely negates that by having him try to steal the crab pie formula again at the end of the movie. So it's like, all right.
Time is a flat circle, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what they're going for.
Well, the joke at the end is like, okay, everything's going back to normal, so.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
But do they end up in the all-chrome future?
No, they don't.
How do you not have a callback to that when you have time travel?
There is actually some callbacks to the show, which is pretty cool.
They better.
There's one part where Patrick gets hit on the head and says Finland, which was a joke in an episode.
That's awesome.
What was it? There was one that I thought was pretty funny. There was one that was like really weird that I'm not sure if was intended to be a callback, but it seems like it
should be.
So at the latter third of the movie is SpongeBob and his friends like out on land.
Okay.
And they have a thing where it's like they turn into superheroes and like try to defeat Antonio Banderas, who is Antonio Banderas is in this movie.
Yeah, what?
As the villain. He plays Burger Beard, the pirate.
God. They couldn't even use the Flying Dutchman. They already have that.
Well, it's a live action villain. So they could have used Patchy the Pirate, but
that's
whatever.
That's true. Yeah, I forgot about Patchy.
But so they try to defeat Burger Beard, and they all turn into superheroes.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Krabs turns into this robot Krabs, and it looks exactly like the robot Krabs that Plankton uses in one episode of SpongeBob.
Oh, yeah. I remember that episode.
Which is a weird little callback.
Had to have been. There's no way they could do that by accident.
Yeah. And there's a couple other ones. Like, there's a character named Flats, I think. It's like really... it's like one-time character who, like, showed up Krusty Krab, and, like... it's like this big fat guy, and I remember in the episode Squidward was like, "Well, you'll have tiny a small salad," and he's like, "I'll have the triple patty deluxe with extra whatever."
So he's the comic book guy,
basically. But he's in the background of like a scene in Krusty Krab, that kind of thing. There's like small Easter eggs.
Yeah,
there's like small Easter eggs throughout.
Right.
That are pretty nice for SpongeBob fans. And I was amazed that I got all the callbacks.
I'm impressed.
I haven't seen many of those episodes in like 10 years.
In a long time.
So it was cool.
Good.
In any case, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, it's a fun time. If you like SpongeBob, just go see it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's basically what
or
I'm saying.
If you get to the theater and you don't want to see Lazarus Effect.
Yeah. If you don't want to see Lazarus Effect, and you also don't want to see Focus, which I've heard is pretty good.
It's probably the movie we should have done.
We probably should have done Focus in all realisticity.
I believe the correct word is reality.
Nah.
Okay.
Nope. I think you're wrong.
I've heard it both ways.
But yeah, so I think that brings us to the end of the film book cast.
Yes.
Mike, do you have anything to add?
No. I think we did a good job.
You're like Robin Gibb in the Barry Gibb talk show.
What?
Is that a reference going over your head?
I mean, I know the reference, but I don't remember specifically.
In the Saturday Night Live sketch, the Barry Gibb talk show.
Yeah.
Jimmy Fallon, Justin Timberlake play Barry and Robin Gibb. And it's like, Robin, do you have anything to add? And Justin Timberlake's like, no.
That's awesome.
No, I don't.
That's awesome. Oh, man.
Anyway, so that brings us, that brings us to the end of Film Book Cast. You can find more of my work at filmbook.com. I podcast about many different TV shows. The Walking Dead, Arrow, The Flash, Agent Carter, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and so on. And you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog. And Mike, where can we find you on the internet this week?
Well, I've rebranded. And I've taken a completely original decision. And my new Twitter handle where people can follow me is at MDFilmBlog.
Yes. So your old Twitter account was protected, I believe.
Yeah. It's kind of like for me and my friends. And I figured I might as well make a public one if I'm going to actually
do this.
Use it. Yeah. Use it for this.
Tell people to follow
you. Tell people to follow me on it. Yeah.
All right.
So all one of you can do that if you feel like it.
Right. So M. Smith Film Blog, MD Film Blog.
Yes.
That is the way to do it.
Made it simple for you.
All right, guys. So I think what should be our next movie to review, Mike?
I don't know. What?
I guess Chappie.
Chappie, yeah. I'm excited for Chappie.
All right. So I think next episode we'll be reviewing Chappie.
You know what? I got a good test to see if anyone listens to this. Send us a tweet and tell us what movie we should review.
Yeah, do that.
No, Mom, you can't do it. That doesn't count.
All right, guys. So we will probably be reviewing Chappie in the next episode. So until then, we'll see you guys later.